We were on a slide, I think a few slides slightly ahead of this, so I will go back to that, but I thought I'll just remind you that lambda is generally used for the arrival rate, and mu is the service rate, so it's jobs per second. And so with that, and there are M servers, so with that, we were on this slide. And the issue was, we were on this discussion about the stability condition. And the issue, there are several issues. First issue was whether there's equal, this is really strictly less than or is it equal to? And second thing was that, okay, so let's issue that one. First of all, we already cleared last time this, what does instability mean? Instability has nothing to do with the loss, and instability has to do with the, actually strictly speaking, instability has to do with the system state. And in these cases, in the case of queues, one way to specify the system state is number of people in the queue. Actually, we will go into state diagram in the next chapter. But if the system state is bounded somehow, then we say it is stable. If the system state becomes unbounded, then we say it is unstable. And so for this purpose here, for our purpose, infinite queue is instability. So if the buffer size is finite, the queue cannot be infinite. Everybody can come and get lost, but that system is stable. The system itself is stable. Similarly, finite population system cannot have infinite queue. Right? So those are done. Then the next question was, two things happened. One, somebody had asked, my father who was here, who had asked whether it is necessary or sufficient. So it turns out there is an example of DD1 queue. If everybody came one job per second and everybody got service at one job per second, lambda is equal to mu, right? But this Q is stable, Q is not growing, right? So that means it is really, sorry, let me see, am I doing it right? So lambda equal to, lambda less than mu is sufficient, but not necessary. So less than is sufficient, all right? Second question was asked, and this was by Ian, he is coming maybe later. But basically, this was his point was that if I have lambda equal to mu for a random case, not DD1 case, for a random case, and if I do a simulation, in the simulation, the system will go up because the arrivals will come, and sometimes the arrivals will not come, and the system will go down, and the system will be stable. There is only one problem with that argument, and I think I should bring it up when he comes in so that he is satisfied with this answer, is that when you do a simulation, simulation by definition is finite time. And, you know, because you cannot do infinite time. But let's say we do a simulation, what will happen is because everything is probabilistic, you will get, in some case, you will get that the queue builds up because the arrivals are suddenly there, and then there are no arrivals for some time, and then the queue goes down. So that is one possibility. But what will happen is, it is also possible that the arrivals are more than the departures, and the queue is here when you finish the simulation. And if you had continued, it will still be, you know. So while there is very small possibility that your queue will go down to zero, but what the statistics say is that really the probability is one, it's lambda equal to mu, that the queue will go to infinity. So in most cases, your simulation will basically overflow or you know, crash. But in some cases, it may not. Right? So that doesn't prove that the system is stable if it doesn't crash. Right? But in some cases only. So for our purposes, basically, we need that equality sign to be strict. Okay?
So, for MM1,
yeah.
If you are equal, it will
work
infinity if you have
infinite time? See, thing is, the probability is 1.
Okay.
Probability is 1 that you will get a long queue. Now, the thing is, because it is still random. See, thing is, it's 0.99999 kind of thing, right? If you have, let's say, 10 nines, still there is some possibility that you will get some zero, I mean, some finite queue.
So the probability one, it goes above any given integer,
Yeah, right. All right, now this thing is in red because this is a modification to the previous slides. And what I did was, I made these four slides which I have modified. So there is a handout, this one page only, which has four slides. And suppose there are new slides, and we'll continue with that. So there are three more slides which I added later on. So we'll come to that. I think this is the first one, right? Yeah, this is the first slide which has been changed. Okay. All right, so we continue from there. Any question about the stability thing? Hey, Ian, come on in. No, we were just talking about stability, and we just agreed. We just agreed that this is right.
Yeah, right.
No, the issue was for what happens for NM1 if lambda equal to mu.
It's not stable.
Okay, good. All right, then. So the next issue is what happens with numbers in the system. So number in the system is equal to number waiting plus number being served. That is always true, right? If that is always true, then you can just do the means, and you will get that the mean number in the system is always equal to the mean number waiting and mean number being served. So that is good. What about the variance? The variance does not work that way. All right? While the means are true always, for variance, those two things have to be independent. These two things, the number waiting and the number being served. The service does not have to depend upon number waiting. It is quite possible in some systems the service goes faster if there are many people waiting. Okay? That is called load dependent server. For load dependent server, this will not apply. But if it is load independent, so the service does not depend upon the people in the queue or jobs in the queue, then you have the variance also equal to the variance of the queue, I mean variance of waiting people plus the variance in the service. Alright? Then the number versus time. Now these are all true for all the queues, I mean basically, so we are not making any assumptions about exponential MM1 or anything like that. Okay? Oh, yeah. Thank you. All right, we'll start from here. So, number versus time. If the jobs are not lost, this is the only thing we are making assumption. If the jobs are not lost, that's the only assumption. Then the mean number in the system is equal to arrival rate times the response time, mean response time. Or another way to say the same thing, actually, number three, same thing to say is the mean number in the queue, means basically mean number waiting is equal to arrival rate times mean waiting time. And this is known as, either one of them you can say, is called Little's law. Now, it's not very trivial, it doesn't seem like how does it happen? But this is very powerful because there is no assumption. The only assumption we make is that the jobs are not lost. And therefore you can use it in any system, whether it is DD1, GG1, MM1, you know, any kind of stuff. Okay? Even load dependent servers and everything else. So we are not assuming anything about the service or arrivals. All we are assuming is for these two formulas is that the jobs are not lost. Alright? So basically when you have a system, one thing you can do is just apply this right away and see if you get anything meaningful. Alright? And I will prove this in a minute. So yeah. Okay, so this is basically we divide it into two parts. The number in this service Now, I have to change this subscript in my next edition, but right now, number in service, number in queue. So basically, this is the waiting people, and this is the people being served. The total is N, which is called number in system. Right? So the waiting people do not include, and I try to say waiting because many books call them people in the queue. It's very confusing because people in the queue, queue length, by the way, if you use the word queue length anywhere in any book, that includes both of them. Since queue length includes both of them, either I use number in the queue, which is NQ, or I use number waiting. But I think I will just remove the word number in the queue so that we just use number waiting and it's clear what we are talking about. So number waiting are not getting the service. Similarly, the waiting time means only the time that you go from here to the front of the queue, I mean to get the service. Okay, beginning of the service. So waiting is that part and the service is the part which starts right after that. And response time, just remember, response time is when you come in to when you get out. So that includes both. And believe it or not, more often than not, we really need the whole thing. We really don't care whether I was waiting or getting service. You know, we need for the jobs to come in and get out. Right? So that's the important part. All right. So I will prove the little slide in a minute, and it's very easy to prove. But let's just do the same thing that we did for the number to for the time. So the response time is equal to waiting time plus service time. This is always true. And therefore, their means are always equal. Basically, mean of response time is equal to mean of the waiting time plus mean of the service time. However, the variance is not true. Variance is true only if the service is independent of the jobs, number of jobs. Means load independent server. All right? So now these six things will apply in most cases. Two of them will not apply if the service is not independent, right? And most important thing we said was this one, which applies as long as there are no jobs lost in the system. All right, before I go to the proof of the Little's law, let's just do this quiz. And I will just give actually 30 seconds per question, and I will start in 1 minute 30 seconds. So the correct answers are, if a queue has two persons waiting, so the number in system is, actually this is not correct. Yeah, it's N plus 2, basically N is the number of servers. So let me just correct that. All right, while we are on this one, the next one is if the arrival rate is 2 jobs per second, the mean inter-arrival time is 0.5 seconds, right? Just the opposite, 1 upon lambda. In a 3-server queue, the jobs arrive at the rate of 1 jobs per second, 3-server queue, 1 jobs, and the service time should be less than 1 upon 3, so that is lambda upon m mu, so lambda less than m mu. So it should be service time should be less than 1/3 for the queue to be stable. Right?
So you have 3 queues and 1 server?
No. You have 3 servers and 1 queue. This is okay. Some people have different answers?
Three servers. 1 per second.
So, okay, so let's see. One third, okay, hold on, let me see. Sandu's time should be less than 3 seconds. I think 3 seconds, right? You're saying 3 seconds?
Yes.
You're right. Yeah. Good. All right. So 3 seconds. Good? All right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, all of these slides are being made just live. I mean, in the sense that these are not there before. As you can see. So, I'm sorry, is there something else?
I just wanted to make sure that it's being recorded.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, actually it is being recorded. And by the way, I have two, it is being recorded twice. I mean, like, this is recording video and this is recording audio. So video has its audio also. All right, now let us look at the literature, because this is very important to understand. Basically, what it says is that if you go to any system, and you don't need to know about the system or anything, as long as you know that nothing is being lost, right? And you just measure the number of people who arrived. Don't have to worry about what is their distribution. Just number of people that arrived, and you know the time, clock time, so you know the arrival rate. Just divide, you know, number of people arrived, number of jobs arrived, number of jobs finished, number of jobs arrived. And obviously, you make sure that the departure is equal to arrival, so that means there are no people who have been, jobs have been lost or staying inside. So if that is the case, then mean number inside the system means the mean queue length inside the system is equal to the arrival rate times the mean response time. Okay? And so this can be applied to any system. And so let me show you how it can be used. But before that, in systems in which the jobs are lost due to finite buffers, the law can be applied to the power that does not include. So that will make sense once I show you this other picture. This picture I want to show you is that you can apply it to just the servers. You can apply just to server, you can apply just to the queue, you can apply to the whole system. You can apply this to any system. That's the power of it. So if you apply just to the whole system, then you have to make sure that nothing gets lost. But suppose something gets lost in the queue. Suppose buffers are finite and the jobs get, so that it does not apply to that queue, but it still applies to people being served. Because nobody is getting lost while they're being served. All right? And you could have a whole network of queues, same thing will apply. All right? And the proof is very simple, actually. So I generally am not going to prove many things here because we want to really apply these laws, but this is very simple and easy to understand, is that all you're doing is standing outside. And as a person or a job comes in, you give it a number. So job number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you take it. And when they get out, so note the time that job number 1 came in at this time. When they get out, you note the time. So you know that the response time for job 1 was so much. Response time for job 2 was so much. Right? So that's all you do. You don't know what is happening inside, but basically you know the arrival time and the response time, and you know the job number. Now you can plot it in 3 different ways. One way is you plot the time and you plot when the job number came in. So job number 1 came in at time 0, 2 came in at time 3, 3 came in at time 5. We plotted that and then they departed. Job number 1 departed at time 4 and so on and so forth. This is one way to plot that system. Right. Second way to plot the same system is that you plot how many are still inside. So you can calculate, because if job 1 came in at time 1, nobody else came in but nobody came out. So there is one person inside the system. And similarly, if you're doing that, and you can plot this way where you know at each time how many people are inside. Third way to plot the same thing is that you plot by the job number. Job number 1 came in and it spent 4 seconds, 2 came in and it spent about, 3 seconds, right? And 3 came in and it spent 2 seconds. Now all these three areas are equal. Alright? And therefore you can just say that mean number in the system, which is J upon T, J is the number of, is the total area inside, and T is the time, total time. Mean number in the system is equal to N upon T times J upon N. N cancels out. And so N upon T is the arrival rate. And J upon N is the mean number, J upon N, the mean number in the system, J upon T is the mean response time. Let's see, I think there is a slight problem here. N upon T is the arrival rate, J upon N is the area divided by the number is the response time. So arrival rate and lambda times R is equal to mean number in the system. So this is correct. J upon T is the mean number in the system. Now mean time in the system is, so let's see, the way you figure out mean number in the system is from this graph. This area is J, right? And then you divide this by T, so you get the mean number. So J upon T is the mean number in the system. The arrival rate you get from one of these graphs. So let's see, so basically this is clear, N upon T is the arrival rate. So mean number in the system is the arrival rate times mean time in the system. And actually you can just, do other way around to get, the way we remember this is simply this one, where mean N is equal to lambda R. N is the number in the system is equal to lambda arrival rate times response time, lambda R. So, let me go here. So, N is equal to lambda R. Yeah. So this is the mean response time. This is the mean response time, this is the arrival rate, and this is the first thing is the mean number in the system. N is equal to lambda R. Okay. So, you can apply it to any system, applying this to the queues, applying this to the server, applying to the whole thing, applying to the whole network of things. And so here's an example. Disk server, we manage the average time to satisfy the request was 100 milliseconds. So that is the average response time. The IO rate was 100 requests per second. So that is lambda. That, right? So what is the mean number in the disk? So basically you put N is equal to lambda R. Lambda is 100 requests per second. The response time is 0.1 second. So that means 10 requests in the system. N is equal to lambda R. All right. And we have made no assumptions except that no jobs were lost. Nothing about exponential, nothing about bursty arrival, nothing about long tail, short tail, nothing. For all distributions, for all arrivals, for all service classes. It could be even last come, first served. Like we remember, we talked about this having a shortest time first. Doing this doesn't matter. Okay? Alright. So there is one that you have to do yourself and just try it. 30 seconds or 1 minute maybe. Okay. So the lambda is arrival rate, 120 requests in 1 minute. So 120 requests in 60 seconds, lambda is 2. Right? The mean response time is 1 second. We have to make sure that the units are all same, otherwise they'll be confused. So unit R is 1 second. So N is equal to lambda R. Everybody got 2? Okay, so I'm correct. Good enough. All right. Now we talk about some more terminology, right? And we define what is in a stochastic process. And while it sounds like too much probabilistic, but it is not actually, and it is important to know these things, because if you read a paper or write a paper, they will use some terms. And therefore, first of all, what is a process? A process is nothing but a sequence of random numbers. So if you flip a coin 100 times, you get 100 results, right? 100 numbers. This is head, tail, head, tail, tail, head, whatever, right? This is a process. Arrival process we talked about, service process we talked about. So these are all sequence of random numbers, which are generally functions of time. And stochastic processes means the random numbers and not, you know, deterministic. Well, it turns out even deterministic things are stochastic processes, because they just follow a constant distribution. All right? So random variables which are functions of time, we call them stochastic process. The number of jobs in the queue in a system CPU is a stochastic process. So now the stochastic process have two properties. First is, let's say we are monitoring the number of jobs at a server. So we monitored it one server and we got a whole sequence. Then we go to the next server of the same kind. Okay? And we get a second sequence. And we monitored third system, we get a second sequence. So there are two dimensions. One is the time dimension and second is the space dimension. Every system will have a different sequence. So that is the space. Every time will have a different number. That is the time dimension. Now, so similarly, waiting time in a queue, it could be just one system, but if you monitor different days, it will be different. Right? So you have same thing like a space and time issue. And it will be very difficult. So to make it easy to analyze these things, you have two distributions. One is a distribution which is in a space. So if you have 100 systems, on first observation could have a distribution, a random number, 100 random numbers, right? You have second observation that has a distribution. Third observation is a distribution. And so what people assume is, and we will assume is that, well, they assume some simplification which they are not getting into, but basically there is time dimension and the space dimension. And so let's continue on that until we come to that. So let's see. Take NP as random variable, can find probability distribution. So we can find out the probability distribution for each of these, you know, for every time. Time t equal to 1. There's a distribution. For time t equal to 2, there's a distribution. For time 3 equal to 3, there's a distribution, and so on and so forth, right? And this could be for waiting time, service time, arrival time, or anything. But there are some names that we use quite often in queuing theory. First is discrete or continuous state, then Markov, then birth, death, and Poisson. Okay, so let me just go through them one by one. So we said discrete or continuous state. So there is a time and there is a state. And basically, whatever we are measuring is called a state. So if you are measuring the number of jobs in the queue, that is the state of the system. Okay? And the time, obviously. So the thing is, both of them could be discrete or continuous. The state could be discrete or the state could be continuous. The time could be discrete or time could be continuous. All right? So there are four possible combinations of system. So let's take an example of each of them. can you think of a discrete state first, where this state is only integer numbers, maybe discrete, like the number in the system? You cannot have 4.5 jars in the system at any time. Right? The average could be 4.5, but the real number would be, I mean, the major number would be 5 or 4, something like that, right? So that is a discrete state. What about continuous state? Response time is, if you measure the state, response time, waiting time, and those are all continuous. Now let's talk about discrete time and continuous time. So whenever we are modeling a system, we could model it so that time is t, then t plus 1, and t plus 2, and t plus 3, and there is nothing between t and t plus 1. Right? For example, you could model the number of students in this hall on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, every day, right? So that is only day 1, day 2, day 3. You can't have anything like day 1.5. Right? So that's a discrete time as compared to continuous time. Continuous time is obviously obvious. We could monitor it every second, how many people are here, and then we can say, okay, that's at 4.5 seconds, these many people are here. Right? So you could have any of those four combinations. However, people get confused when they say discrete process. Generally, if nothing is specified, we really mean discrete state. Alright? And so that's what we will talk about, discrete state. There is a state dimension, there is a time dimension, either one, both of them could be continuous, or either one can be continuous or discrete. And so you get those combinations, right? So if the state is discrete, then we call it a stochastic chain. Alright, so chain is another name for a process. Just another name for a process. So Markov process we'll talk about in a minute. You could have Markov's chain. And so chain simply means a discrete process. Yes. And when I don't say anything, it is a state. That's a good one too. So when we don't say anything, then it is a state. Discrete state. Alright. So you could have one, since most of the time in computer systems, even though the time is discrete, actually, I mean, you cannot, basically you do instruction and then you do next instruction, so you could say, you know, time, but mostly we are simulating much longer time scales, so we just use continuous time. All right? All right, so next process is Markov processes. Now, if the future state is independent of the past and depends only on the present, then it's called Markov. So let's understand this very clearly. If I gave you the whole history of the process, I told you that on Monday some instruments were here, on Tuesday some instruments were here, and I gave you the whole 1 year history, and then I asked you how many people you think will be here today. Well, if you don't have to worry about the history at all, only thing you have to know is how many were here yesterday. Right? Only one state, which is actually present, then you're forecasting the future. Right? So how many were there in the current state, then it is called a Markov process. Now it is very similar to memory-less effect, but it is different. We will explain that in a minute. Remember we talked about memory-less distribution? But this is looser than that, actually. In memory less, you didn't really care how long you have been waiting. Here, the time is not really important. The important thing is, what is the state right now? And then, what will be the state in the future? So, if the current state is all it matters and nothing previous to this, then it is a Markov process. Yeah. Exactly. So the thing is, it is orthogonal to discrete time, continuous time. it is actually after one of the discrete state, a continuous state. If it was a discrete state, we would call it a Markov chain. All right. So we don't need to know the history. And that makes it easy. Why we so in the whole system, in most of the Q-in theory books, they will have Markov basically assumption throughout the book, most of the part of the book. Simply because it makes life much easier. And
So the probability can still change over time.
Probability can change over time, but they will depend only upon the current state. So you don't have to see in a most complex case, let's talk about stock prices. Right? Now if I gave you the stock prices for the last 1 month, then you can tell me what the price might be tomorrow. Or you can give me a probability distribution for what the price might be tomorrow. Right? And so clearly it is not Markov. You know why? Because if I just give you yesterday's price and say, tell me what is the price going to be today, you say, well, I don't know. Tell me what happened day before, whether the stock is going up or going down. Right? So that's not Markov.
But I mean, it's even when it says Markov, it could be that the probability changes with time.
Probability changes with time, yeah. Now, we'll talk about that in a minute. Probability changes with time. Basically, is that depending upon the state, so here's the thing. Now let me see. Actually, we have a better example coming up when we really make a state diagram. So depending upon what state you are. So say, for example,
So
that's a fair game. Actually, what you said is right, that you could make a single state very complex. As long as that is known, then you can tell about the next state. And so that would be Markov in that sense. So as long as single state can tell, and that state could be 525 numbers, a state doesn't have to be one number. Could it be what? Include infinity?
Encode the history.
Yeah. The thing is, the more number you put, instead of 25, you put 2500, I mean, it becomes impossible to analyze them because it doesn't really help to have Markov. Because, you know, those 2500 numbers will have to be somehow encoded in the state. So, yes, I mean, right now, the simple thing is, whatever that state is, and that state could have any number of, it could be a vector. Right? As long as I give you that, and that's all I need, only one state, then it is Markov. I would think so. I would think it would be a small vector. In practice. Because, I mean, it could be very large vector, but it doesn't really help you have that property. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we are still coming up. MM1Q that we have talked about so much is clearly Markov, as we'll see the state diagram for that, is that and most of the Qs that we're going to talk about are going to be Markov.
The first one, not even the N order.
Not even the N order, yeah. Now, just one number will indicate the state, which is the number in the Q.
Why is that assumption valid?
Oh, actually, I'm not going to argue that. The thing is, here is the thing. Most of the assumptions that we are making may not be valid. They are being made for analysis because if I don't make it, I can't analyze. So those are being made for the convenience of the mathematician, not for the convenience of the system designers. So I think I said in the very first class is that
knowing this helps us because then we can verify our simulation, we can verify our analysis for that particular point. And then say this doesn't apply to my system and I'm going to make this prediction. So it is just more for validating your analysis that you are going to make that assumption. Was that point clear to you last time? Yeah, right? Yeah. So many of these assumptions for Markov and normality and so on and so forth, these are there for the mathematician because they can't analyze it, they can't publish a paper if they don't make that assumption. Right? And we, as a systems people, we can verify that these assumptions are valid. I mean, we can verify many of the assumptions, but if the assumption is not valid, then we say, okay, well, my results are valid for if I make this assumption and the Q-ring theory tells me and my simulation tells me the same thing. But now I'm going to go and not make the assumption and do a general simulation. So you have to believe me that this is right. So this is like a validation thing, partial validation. All right? Okay. So time spent by a job in an MMQ is a Markov process, and the number of jobs is a Markov chain. All right, you just take that word for granted because I haven't really shown you that statement. But MMM as memoryless means it really doesn't matter, you know, what the history was of the arrival, and the service also doesn't really matter what the history was for the service. So somehow, when we will see the diagram, it will turn out that we can analyze that kind of queue without really knowing the history at all. Good enough? All right. So then we take a special case of the process, and this is the first time I'm showing the state diagram. So this is a state diagram where the state is shown by the number in the queue, a number in the system. So 0 jobs in the system and 1 job in the system, 2 jobs. So this is a state diagram. And if you have 0 jobs in the system at rate lambda 0, the jobs are coming in. Alright? So when 1 job comes in, the state changes to 1. At that point, at rate lambda 1, jobs are coming in. And this is a load-dependent arrivals. Okay? And when a 1 job comes in, the state changes to 2. And then the arrival rate becomes lambda 2 and so on and so forth. J plus 1 up to infinity or finite, whatever. And similarly, when there is 1 job in the system, it is being served at the rate mu 1. Okay? When there are 2, it is being served at rate mu 2. So this is a load dependent service. If you make all of them equal, then becomes load independent service and load independent arrivals. But right now we are just for a general case, we can make the state diagram for load dependent service and load dependent arrival. The lambda and mu are different for every state. Now the only restriction in this state we have made is that only 1 arrival is coming in at a time. I mean, if you had 3 arrivals come in,